Want to try a free sample of berry pie?
Oh, yeah, I do. Wait, time to consult the online experts.
One bite will destroy your
Stop it!
They don't know your body. Only you do. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com. Cygnos.com with code SPARK. Cygnos.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
It's In This League.
They're here.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Come again?
With Scott Bogman and Chris Welch.
Can't wait.
What does that do? Did that blow your mind?
That just happened.
This is the Fantasy Baseball Prospect Podcast, Prospect 1. Hello, friends. I'm Chris Welch. You can find me on Twitter at IsItTheWelch, on the Instagram as well, and at InThisLeague.com. We are mere days away from the May update. Going to be on Monday, officially. I'm going to be dropping the top 500 prospect update, the top 400 dynasty update. You can peruse and check out the Prospect 1 top 200 ADP. And I think it's going to be mid-month. I'll be adding in the 2023 early fantasy look for the 2023 draft. So I guess technically 2024 first-year player values coming out of the upcoming draft, because that is part of what we're going to be doing today. I'll tell you about here in a second. But if you want to check out all the lists and or you want to support everything that I do, go to InThisLeague.com and sign up on the Patreon today. Whether you're just there to get like the ranks and the sheets, or you want to go further and jump in the GroupMe rooms. GroupMe room, explain to people, it's like Discord. It's just a different version. I think it was around before Discord, or maybe they were about the same time. Doesn't matter. It's what we use. You can go download the GroupMe. We can add you to our Prospect One room. We've got baseball. We've got tons of others, card collecting and more. So whatever your flavor is, just that or more, go to InThisLeague.com and sign up today. I would very greatly appreciate it. Joining me on the show today is Joe Doyle. Joe Doyle now over at Future Star Series. And Joe, of course, is a draft expert. That is his bag. This is what he does. He's actually got a top 500 MLB draft list, which is crazy. And Joe is going to be talking to me about the draft prospects. It will be more of a focus kind of on the top end of, you know, what like the first year player first round will look like. Maybe a couple other deeper names. We're about 2 months out. This will kind of be a table setter to getting our brains around maybe where some of the values are. Maybe guys, you've heard the names, you maybe haven't paid attention to, but this will get us set with that when we get closer. And as we get closer, we'll start going deeper. We'll start talking about the names, talking about bigger fantasy stuff. But Joe Doyle's going to join me about 40 minutes or so, and we're going to be focusing on a lot of those guys. Dylan Cruz, Paul Skeens, Chase Dolander, all those dudes. So strap in. That should be fun. Plus, I'm also going to be answering listener questions. It is a listener mailbag question. I dropped the post over on Patreon. That's another one of those special things that if you're part of Patreon, you will get the opportunity to ask one of the questions, and I will put it on the show when I do this type of stuff. So we've got some fantasy questions and we are going to answer there. And there's a bunch of good ones. I don't think, so I'm looking here, not a lot of crossover, bunch of good stuff. And we will get to those after we talk to Joe Doyle. Boy, is it prospect season or what? Crazy. You know, I was, I do a lot of shows and I was on Fantasy Pros today as I am Monday through Friday. And Joe had asked me like, you know, isn't like, I mean, he said it in a different way, but he was essentially like, isn't this crazy? Isn't it awesome? Like every day there's a new prospect. And it really is. It's crazy. It's like insanely wild the amount of guys that are coming up. Obviously, there's a couple things that are also in line with it. The full year of service time, you know, I think you have to like, once you pass like 20 days of the major league season, that kind of opens up. So there's a lot of guys now that are like really far beyond the potential of acquiring that extra service time piece and Super Twos and stuff like that. So they can't, you know, a guy like Matt Mervis, who's just called up, is not going to be able to accrue a full year's service time this year. So it kind of enables them to get an extra year. So we're back to a little bit of like roster manipulation, but there are so many and so many pitchers that have gone up. And that's kind of been the wild one. You know, I was insanely disappointed with that Brandon Pfaadt start. Obviously, I have, to my unfortunateness, I have been the Brandon Pfaadt guy, and it wasn't good. You know, I live streamed on our Twitch, which you guys can check out. If you just follow me on Twitter, you'd know all about it. But we live streamed it, and, you know, the first half was good. The second half was kind of bad, and it was very representative of what he did in the minor leagues. You know, one of the games I watched, he was like 3 2/3, no hit. And then bad call, and then gives up a homer. And then the next inning, he starts giving up more hits, and he has to be taken out. And it's like, oh, man, you know, is this a guy that can't go into the third time through? And part of it's about his arsenal. You know, if you watch the game, I've said it a gajillion times now, there were 10 batted balls over 100 miles per hour in that game. Crazy. Gave up 4 homers. Every single one was over 100 miles an hour. Crazy. His fastball was nothing. You know, and that's the biggest problem here. I'm very anxious to see what happens in the next start because, you know, he had like one whiff on 23 swings on the fastball, but he had like 14 called strikes. This guy's just letting the fastball come in. I take that as no one being afraid of the fastball and sitting on what was a really good slider. You know, his slider, sweeper, hand of God, whatever you call it. Like that thing was awesome. But he had no changeup. It was only a slider. And that slider's a little bit more prone to fly balls. So you got a guy who became a two-pitch pitcher with the secondary pitch being one that induces more fly balls. And I'm worried about it. This is his, he looks different than he did last year. You know, in spring, he looked great. Last year, he looked different. This year, the fastball has not been great throughout all the starts in the minors. The slider has definitely been the dominant pitch. He didn't have some of the command, but we also don't want to absolutely freak out because it was against the second best offensive team in baseball, a road start. He's got a couple, in theory, decent starts coming up this week. So, you know, the people that are panicking on that, I think part of the panic also is induced by the amount of pitching prospects we've seen come up, and many have performed really well. Tanner Bibee has looked fantastic. Taj Bradley, if he was up right now, would probably be my number one of all these guys. Logan Allen has looked good. And, you know, we've had so many that I think it's created chaos because what you're also looking at is like a guy like Grayson Rodriguez, who had a weird start, came out, had a couple great starts, looked bad again. Brandon Pfaadt, one of the biggest names, looked bad. Gavin Stone, one of the biggest names, looked bad. He threw his changeup almost more than his fastball. It was completely ineffective and he needs it to be effective. His fastball also wasn't good.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says
in this league.
Hey, Farva, what's the name of that restaurant you like with all the mozzarella sticks?
In this league.
Oh. Hey, I like you. I like you so much, I'm going to make you my partner. All you have to do is find the gold, and I'll share it with you 50-50.
Prospect One.
We're talking MLB draft, and I cannot think of any single person. I mean, I can think of a couple people. I like a lot of people in the industry, and I want to talk draft with lots of people. But the first person I thought about, because I love doing some pods with him and I love talking, is Joe Doyle, who you can find on Twitter at Joe Doyle, MILB, senior analyst over at the Future Star Series. Now, Joe, what is up, buddy?
Man, I always enjoy podcasting with you. Thank you for the nice intro. It's been, man, what have we been doing this, like 4 years now together?
Something like that. Yeah, do a couple pods, something do like a couple of years, yeah. Something like that. I love doing it. I'll always continue to do it. Now over at the Future Star Series, tell me about the Future Star Series real quick. We can obviously do it at the end as well, but you are doing all your content has moved over into that direction. You were obviously, everyone's known you've been with Prospects Live for a long time, but what is the Future Star Series? Is this a Joe Doyle production?
It's not a Joe Doyle production, no. So we're building out the exact same type of robust content that you are accustomed to seeing from me. You're going to get player interviews, you're going to get big boards for drafts, you're going to get mock drafts, you're going to get industry intel, rumors, feature stories with analytics and scouting built into it. Yeah, I mean, it's the exact same thing, a little bit more robust resources in terms of like getting all over the country and seeing these players and getting video and things like that. But no, I mean, as a whole, it's the exact same operation that I was running at the other company. And I mean, it's been fun so far.
Well, let's talk about it. We're getting prepped here. We're about 2 months out from the MLB draft, which, by the way, my brain still sometimes goes to like the original setup where I wanted to be like, man, we're a month away or something. Remember, it was like in June and now we're into July, but we're about 2 months out roughly from the MLB draft starting up. We've had lots of time to kind of start parsing through what these boards are going to look like. And I want to talk about some of the big guys and we'll kind of burn through these. And I do feel like what I find interesting is there seems to be an industry consensus on what the top five looks like. The orders can change around, but the top five guys are the top five guys. But the number one guy of all of them, Dylan Cruz. Obviously, we don't need to go too crazy on it. People know, but this is the number one consensus player, I think, from top to bottom, hitting almost 500 at LSU so far, 13 homers, double the walks, more than double the walks of strikeouts. He is the bat of bat. The speed has kind of tapered away. So what I want to get out of you, Joe, is talk to me. We know he's going to be 1-1, but what level is Dylan Cruz comparative to other prospects we've seen in the past as far as how impactful this bat's going to be, especially when we're looking at it from a fantasy perspective?
Yeah, from a fantasy perspective, just to represent the speed there that you were talking about, I think it's a more of a conscious effort for him not to run. He's looked very, very good, very fast in the field. So I'm not worried about, you know, the speed or the body regressing at all. But listen, when you're talking about Dylan Cruz, I think the physical tools are what gets blown up all over the internet. You know, the exit velocities and the batting average and, you know, the home runs and this and that. The thing that people don't talk about with Dylan Cruz, and the reason he's going to be the number one pick, is it is one of the most incredibly polished bats you will find in this class. It's one of the more polished bats you will find in the last 10 years. He doesn't chase. I mean, he never chases out of the zone. I think he's running like a 14% chase rate right now, which is just obscene. And then you'll get the naysayers that are saying it's Dylan Cruz, he's going to be the number one pick in the draft. Like, why would anyone pitch to him? Well, he's got Tommy White right behind him, and Tommy White's, you know, on pace to hit like 25 home runs this year for LSU. Just as equally an explosive bat for the LSU Tigers. So yeah, I mean, Dylan Cruz in terms of college bats is probably right maybe a tick above Adley Rutschman in terms of,
see,
like this thing is gonna hit, like this thing is gonna work.
That I'm glad you said that, because what I was curious about is how, what level of slam dunk is this, you know, like what level of oh my god, this is the guy. Adley was in a really good class. I mean, you also had Andrew Vaughn in there in the draft class itself. Bobby Witt was involved in that, but like, what level comparatively to the last couple drafts is Dylan Cruz the slam dunk of prospects? You're saying he's almost on par with Adley, or is, or I mean, if you're looking at like the last 10 years, I feel like this is, from a draft perspective, the biggest no-brainer we've had in the last 10 years, but you think he kind of sits on the same level as Adley?
Well, I'll put it this way. I think Dylan Cruz has a better chance than Adley Rutschman had of being a considerable offensive player. Now, that being said, I do think Adley Rutschman had a much cleaner, faster path to being like a 4-win player at the big league level, but there's going to be way more pressure put on the bat for any corner outfielder. I mean, you're just going to have to hit a lot more than a polished defensive catcher would ever have to hit. That being said, yeah, I do think Dylan Cruz is going to hit a little bit more than Adley Rutschman, certainly going to hit for, I think, a little bit more power than Adley Rutschman. So in terms of like slam dunk, like this guy is definitely going to be a big leaguer and should move fast and should be a productive big leaguer. I think Dylan Cruz is kind of in that same conversation as Bryce Harper. And I'm not saying he's going to be Bryce Harper by any means, but he's in that same conversation as Bryce Harper, Adley Rutschman, Dylan Cruz. Like the guy's just Chris Bryant, like the guy's going to produce.
Yeah, I feel like he's in a level two of similar to what's going on in the NFL. If anyone listening plays like NFL and dynasty fantasy football, and how Bijan Robinson is the guy that if you can have the number one overall, he's so far and beyond everybody else. That's kind of where Dylan Cruz is. Like the bat is so advanced. He's a great high school bat. It just obviously wanted to go to LSU. It didn't work out as far as where he wanted to be drafted. And at every level, he has proven to be the guy with incredible skills. And because he can run, you wonder if that's going to be a hidden portion of his game when he gets to the majors, or at least gets into professional ball in the minors, with how stolen bases are being treated in general, with a little bit more of an aggressive approach, the bases closer, if that is something that is added to his game. But it's a high batting average, it's a high power tool, it's a high end four category player with the potential to be a five tool. Maybe all the expectations that people had with Jared Kelnick are like who Dylan Cruz could be and more. Now, one thing that we may see, this is not your number two prospect, which people can find over at thefuturestarseries.com. Check out the top 500 board. This is not your number two, but could this be the first time that we see back-to-back LSU, back-to-back teammates go one and two? And I'm talking about Paul Skeens, who is insane to watch. Like, there was a lot of Chase DeLander stuff into the preseason, but immediately watching Paul Skeens, you just have to kind of sit back in awe, really, as he's got a sub two ERA, 124 strikeouts to 12 walks in 65 innings.
That's insane.
But his path is weird because this was an Air Force pitcher who transferred over, and he has become and taken over the number one overall SP spot. And this isn't like in previous years where we've got these weak pitching classes. It's not. And this is an elite of elite level guy. At one time, I thought maybe he could go 1-1. I just don't see a team being able to pass on Cruz. He very likely could go 1-2. So again, fantasy, where and how should we approach Paul Skeens, who very likely is a top three pick, but might be back-to-back LSU guys?
Listen, I'm not the best fantasy player in the world. Like, I'll be the first person to say that. But that being said, like, this is the most dominant pitcher that we've seen at the college level in a long time. Credit to Tyler Jennings. He did the research on this. Paul Skeens is striking out more batters than any other pitcher in college baseball in the last 20 years, and he isn't really slowing down in the SEC. Like, he just continues to punch tickets over and over and over, and it's coming from like just pure stuff. Like, he hides the ball well, there's a ton of deception, he's up to 102, throws the slider 91 miles an hour. Like, it sounds like Jacob DeGrom. It's not Jacob DeGrom, but those are the types of pitches that he's throwing. I think the interesting thing with Skeens is, like, coming into this season, scouts that saw him at Air Force, scouts that saw him on the Cape, Team USA, they thought the changeup was going to be his best weapon, and he's hardly had to throw it. He has hardly had to throw it because the slider and the fastball are so good. I think if you're looking at Paul Skeens from a fantasy perspective, the type of things that I would keep in mind here, he's probably going to move extremely quickly. I guess it depends on the team that he lands with, but I think he has a legitimate shot of being a big league pitcher by the end of 2024. And he does look like the type of guy, so long as the control and command stay where they're at. And 12 walks in 65 innings is just, it's unconscious. He does look like the kind of guy that's going to be a high strikeout, reasonably low walks, and with that 6'7" body and the pitch counts that he's thrown up there.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Wait, let me explain something to you. I am not
in this league.
You're
in this league.
I'm the dude.
Man, you are one pathetic loser.
Get it! I mean, he seems like a kind of guy that is going to be a workhorse ace that can give you seven innings if he's commanding the baseball. So, yeah, I mean, it's crazy that we're talking about Paul Skeens as possibly the top college pitcher available since Steven Strasburg. and he's not a slam dunk number one overall pick.
Yeah, and that's the space that we're in right now. Are there worry? What is your biggest worry with Skeens? You know, something that came to my mind when you were talking, I got this flash, and it's probably not relative, but I got this flash of thinking about Jack Leiter and Chase and Kumar Rocker. And the reason behind it was they were so dominant at Vanderbilt. The same thing would kind of happen where I talked to Kumar when he was a high school pitcher before, you know, he didn't end up going in the draft. And he told me, he's like, I want to work on my changeup. Well, he's still like saying the exact same thing now, but he was so dominant. Yeah. He didn't need to use the changeup. Same thing with Leiter. It was just like fastball was so dominant. You got the curveball, like that worked everything. Is there anything in where we maybe excuse a guy like Skeens because his fastball is so dominant, fastball slider so dominant that he doesn't, you know, you're saying, hey, he's got this great pitch, blah, blah, blah. He doesn't need to use it. But is it there? Is it really going to be there?
I think it's going to be there. He has a track record of showing the pitch. Like he's shown the 85 to 88 mile an hour changeup in the past. So obviously he's had feel for that pitch. I think, you know, the weird thing is the only thing that I would really worry about with Paul Skeens would be what does he look like outside of being under the tutelage of Wes Johnson on a daily basis, right? Wes Johnson is one of the best pitching minds in the entire sport, pro, amateur, it doesn't matter. And he's taken such an enormous jump under the tutelage of Wes Johnson that, you know, what does this look like under a AA pitching coach in, you know, the Nationals organization or in the Rangers organization? Like, philosophically, can he take a step back because his mental cues aren't hitting there? You know, with his delivery, there are some like unique directional movement patterns that he has that I think if he gets out of sync could kind of exacerbate command or control issues as he gets into pro ball. But honestly, I think with Skeens, the talent is so obscene that the biggest concern you have is kind of just the messaging.
And I think, you know, you have it locked in. If Pittsburgh is going to go with Dylan Cruz at number one, the Nationals are going to be staring at Paul Skeens. And I think that might have some people worried, though. The development of Mackenzie Gore has been good. Josiah Gray has looked well. But, you know, and how they've developed prospects might be some of the worries. So you actually might have the only concerns coming out of where he's actually going. What has differentiated Skeens from Chase Dolander? Because that was the guy. That was like the guy coming into the season. So much so that Dolander was put with Cruz. Like some are like, you know, there could be a team. The Pittsburgh Pirates could want an ace and it could be Dolander. But that has kind of separated those two in general, at least not to say that he hasn't been, you know, a good pitcher. 82 strikeouts, 57 innings pitch, but he's got an over 4 ERA. Walks a little bit up, especially compared to last year. He pitched 79 innings, walked only 13 last year. He's got 57 innings and he's walked 21. So where are your big differences? Like what has been the separator for you between Skeens and Dolander?
Yeah, I think Chase Dolander is fighting such an uphill battle. I mean, he is such a disadvantage because preseason he was being talked about in the same vein as what Paul Skeens is talking about. Being talked about right now, like the best pitcher that we've seen in 15 years. Command is there, the stuff is there, the body is there, the operation is there, and he is still having an obscenely good season. I mean, he's still striking out a ton of batters. He's still walking a very healthy amount of batters. Now, the stuff has ticked back a little bit, and some of the analytic traits have ticked back and regressed a little bit, but he's still having such an insanely good year. But when you hold the candle to what Paul Skeens is doing this year, all of the sudden, it looks like Chase Dolander is just another, you know, grocery pail, you know, run-of-the-mill starting pitcher. So, you know, you hold up Dolander's numbers against, let's say, the number three pitcher, Rhett Lauder, and it's noticeably better in terms of pure stuff and performance and things like that when you compare those two pitchers. So I think when you have the talking heads on the internet saying, oh, well, Chase Dolander's stuff is regressing and the velo is down just a little bit and the slider isn't as effective, and a guy leapfrogs him as obscenely as Paul Skeens has, you kind of just drive home the narrative of, oh, Chase Dolander is struggling. Like, this is not the same pitcher we've seen. And, you know, it's not the same pitcher that we saw last year, but it is still cut and dry the second best pitcher in this class and a slam dunk top 10 pick.
You know, what would be really interesting is imagine here with the fourth pick, the Texas Rangers, who already have Kumar Rocker, who have Jack Leiter, then bring in a guy like Jace Delander and what that future rotation could look like. Though you could argue the development of both of those have been, it's so funny, Leiter and Rocker actually kind of going in opposite directions so far this season. Leiter is not progressing. Mm-hmm. Rocker is. Another one would be at five with Minnesota, because boy, Minnesota at the top of what they're doing at the major league level with the development of the changes of Pablo Lopez, Sonny Gray has looked better, that how that can trickle down, that might be an amazing destination for a guy like Dolander and might improve his value. Now, the number two guy on your board at the Future Series, at FutureStarSeries.com, is Florida's Wyatt Langford. So you have him above Skeens, and this is great for a fantasy conversation because fantasy bats are going to play over pitchers for the most part, and you have got him at number two ahead of Skeens. So talk to us about Wyatt Langford and how he is separating himself and what that offensive profile really looks like.
Yeah, I mean, Dylan Cruz is having such a big season that nobody wants to talk about the fact that Wyatt Langford in 40 games is hitting over 400 in the SEC for the Florida Gators. He's got 40 walks and 24 strikeouts. His exit velocity numbers and his contact numbers and his ability to handle spin and velocity numbers are all right on par with Dylan Cruz. Now, it's not the most, like, the chase rate, and I really lean on the chase rate with Dylan Cruz and that polish because that's kind of what's going to get him selected first overall. It's not as good as Cruz, but Wyatt Langford has been unbelievable this season. He has 11 home runs. He's stealing bases. He's got three stolen bags this year. And he's got three stolen bags after suffering a horrific male injury halfway through the season. He hasn't run as much since then. So most people don't understand, like, Wyatt Langford was better than Dylan Cruz in 2022. He had 26 homers. He hit 356 with a 719 slug. And he has kept up with Dylan Cruz in almost every way this season. So I think these are two really, really special bats. They're both, I mean, Wyatt Langford is like right there as well, kind of a tier below that Adley Rutschman tier. Like, this guy can really, really hit. And again, if Dylan Cruz wasn't batting like 490, we'd be talking a lot more about Wyatt Langford. He's a premium, premium prospect.
Where do you think he lines up? If you were to like look at last year's draft class, like where would he have lined up against some of the bats in that year's that draft class?
I mean, he would have been. Last year's draft class is a tough comparison because it was so high school heavy. Like, you had the Drew Jones and the Jackson Holidays and the Elijah Greens. But in terms of like college bats, I don't think there's any doubt that he's not only a tier above like the Zach Nettos of last year, but he's such a significant tier above Jacob Berry and above Brooks Lee. Like, if all of those guys are going to be, you know, let's put it this way. I don't see Jacob Berry or Brooks Lee or Gavin Cross being all-stars at the big league level. I just don't see it. Wyatt Langford, I think, could be a guy that hits 20 home runs, steals 20 bases, plays a legitimate left field. And I mean, I'll just put it that way. He's so much better than the college bats last year. And while he doesn't have the upside, like the ceiling of a Drew Jones or a Jackson Holiday, I still think Wyatt Langford's going to be a top 25 prospect in baseball the second he gets drafted.
So I think I'm really glad you didn't mention the name I wanted to throw at you, but I think you kind of made the answer. But I was going to say it sounds like he could maybe be three. So how about Elijah Green versus Wyatt Langford? Like, how does that sparse out for you? Obviously high school versus college, but you're getting a little bit of a pro taste you've seen in Green. You see the insane big power numbers, but you see the very worrisome strikeout numbers. And I think maybe the ceiling is higher on a guy like Green, but if you had to make the choice, who do you think is valued higher, Elijah Green or Wyatt Langford?
Yeah, I mean, Elijah Green has been exactly what we kind of feared he would be, 40 strikeouts and 86 plate appearances at low A ball. Like, that's kind of what you were praying he wasn't going to be, but it's a lot of what we saw the final year of his high school career. At the end of the day, like, you hit the nail on the head. I still do think Elijah Green has more raw power. He's a faster runner. He has a better chance to stick in center field, albeit 50-50 at best. It's kind of your appetite for risk, right? I mean, there is the chance that Elijah Green is a 30-30 guy someday. There's a chance that he's a 270 hitter and hits 40 home runs. Like, Elijah Green could be the 2021 version of what Tyler O'Neill was. I don't think there's any question. He could be a 6.5, 7-win player if it all clicks. but there's a long ways to go for him to get to that point. Wyatt Langford is going to be a better prospect in Major League Baseball the second he steps into a pro clubhouse, or the second he gets drafted. And while he might not have the crazy perennial all-star upside that Green does, I definitely think you're getting a pro who's going to run into a few all-star seasons. Maybe not at worst, but like that's the floor, right? Like a very productive big leaguer.
So, okay, so it's interesting. It becomes a floor versus ceiling. Talent, you know, is in the same general vicinity, but it's your appetite. It is the floor versus the ceiling, college bat versus high school, big, crazy upside versus what you might know.
Let me add this one other piece. And I don't, this isn't a disparaging comment towards Elijah Green, but I think it rings true. Like this is a fact. I think the floor is low enough on Elijah Green, and that the amount of ladders that he has to climb and the checkpoints that he has to climb to get to where you want.
Hi guys, here's my morning routine. First, I drink olive oil. Next, I take an ice bath. Ooh, feeling super healthy.
If your health advice sounds strange coming from a kid, maybe it's just strange. Cygnos pairs AI with a biosensor so you can track your body's unique responses to food, movement, and more in real time, helping you achieve your health goals. Get $10 off select plans at Cygnos.com, Cygnos.com, with code SPARK, Cygnos.
Him to be to where you dream on him being, I would take Wyatt Langford over Elijah Green in a fantasy draft 100 times out of 100 right now.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Let's pit two guys up against each other, and this is getting back to like, you know, this. I don't know if this is going to be a floor versus ceiling conversation, but it can be like a college versus a high school situation.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
It's In This League.
It's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what they used to make.
In This League.
I'm the smartest guy in the world. Says who?
The IQ test you took in prison. Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Walker Jenkins, you've got, who is a great, great high hit tool player. There's power in there. Versus Max Clark, who at one time, Max Clark was seen by many as maybe a top number one overall pick coming out of high school. Max is a crazy, crazy addicted physical athlete, works out, looks like he is locked in with, from an analytical standpoint. He's always been on a circuit impressing. I know how you sparse this out on the ranks, but what are the real differences between these two when people are processing both of these guys?
Well, they're polar opposite people. I mean, they are so adjacent from each other that it really becomes like, what's your flavor, right? So Max Clark will forever play with a chip on his shoulder. He always thinks he's been slighted. He always thinks he deserves more credit and more respect. And in a lot of ways, he does. I mean, all he's done is perform, produce. I think in a lot of ways, I see a lot of Jared Kelnick in Max Clark, just in that.
I love
that. Yeah, just that relentless fire to prove people wrong and to like be the absolute best player that anyone has ever seen. With Walker Jenkins, it's so much quieter. It's so much just, you know, all about business. You know, he spends his free time swimming. He calls absolutely everybody sir and ma'am. It doesn't matter if it's a phone call with a scout, with me, with anybody. It's yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Not just the first, you know, introduction. It's always yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. For the entirety of the conversation. And you ask him like, hey man, like I'm just writing about you. Like I'm a friend. Like just call me Joe. And he goes, well, you know, that's not how I handle myself, sir. Like you're always gonna be sir to me. You're always an elder to me. Which is, it's unbelievable. Like he is, and I don't say this lightly, the most impressive human being, personality, attitude wise I've ever spoken to, and it's just not even a conversation. It's not even remotely close.
You know what's so funny? I just want to throw this out there. I'm not sure the skill sets match up, but I've the two guys I'm going to compare, I've spoken and interviewed Jared Kelnick, and I've talked with countless times, Bobby Witt Jr. And I feel like this is like a Bobby Witt Jr. versus Kelnick situation, because Bobby Witt, not exactly like, yes, sir, but he is humble. He is nice. He is kind. He wants to make sure people are comfortable. There's a talent level. And Jared Kelnick is very fiery. You can see the chip on his shoulder. There's some oddities to it. And I just got this vibe of Kelnick and Bobby Witt, as you were describing from a personality standpoint. I don't think the games maybe exactly vibe up here, but yeah, you know, now you put into play the skill sets that are going to go on the field. How do they match up?
Yeah, I mean, so Max Clark is going to stay in the middle of the field. First of all, I've been throwing the Grady Sizemore comp. I've seen a Johnny Damon comp. I think Kylie posted that. I think that's pretty appropriate. Like, the guy's definitely going to hit. He hits screaming rockets all over the field. It doesn't really strike out. So in terms of like a fantasy perspective, Max Clark kind of profiles as that top of the order guy who can, you know, run into 18 to 24 home runs at the next level if he can really start to launch the ball, kind of at his peak. Whereas Walker Jenkins is like, he's like built in a lab to bat third overall in a lineup. Like it's almost like Joey Votto-esque in terms of the bat and the polish and like the impact of primo Joey Votto. Except he's going to be playing left or right field with a plus throwing arm. I don't think, you know, Walker Jenkins gets plus run times. He's never been a real runner on the bases, and he has had some durability issues with his hip throughout his high school career. So I'm not sure if he's ever really going to be a stolen base type of guy. But if you told me now that, you know, Walker Jenkins was going to hit 290 for 15 years and hit 300 homers, you know, I'm not going to slap that label on the kid as an 18-year-old, but I'll say it wouldn't surprise me. And I'll tell you one more thing. Walker Jenkins wouldn't be the first to tell you that he did it either.
That's interesting. That is very interesting. A couple other, to try to get what we can get in here. There are some middle infield guys that I think are fascinating. Jacob Gonzalez has been a big name. Jacob Wilson out here at Grand Canyon University, son of, oh God, I just forgot. Jack Wilson. Thank you. Easy enough. But also a player that you are higher on than most, Arjun Nimala. And I might be butchering his name a little bit. So do you have any quick thoughts on those guys?
Yeah, I mean, so I think Jack, or now you got me saying Jack. I think Jacob Wilson might be the most, I think Jacob Wilson, I think the argument can be made that he's the most polarizing player in this class. Like, I think it's interesting, Grand Canyon University, even though it's a for-profit university, they don't have a TrackMan unit. So like scouts,
which, by the way, I want to point out, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I want to point out,
oh, you're fine,
because that is one of the few, like, and I don't go to like a ton of college games. I've been to ASU. I've been to Grand Canyon University. What is shocking about that is it is a like state of the art thing. You know, Grand Canyon University is quite the place. I mean, it is a nonprofit place. It is built up. I went there to see Liberatore and Nolan Gorman go up against each other. And it's actually shocking that it doesn't have every element of state of the art, because where ASU plays looks like a joke compared to Grand Canyon University. So I just wanted to throw that out there. But to your point with Jacob Gonzalez, one of the most polarizing elements to this, and maybe what you're going to speak of, is how the bat is going to develop. And we've seen some, you know, crazy bursts he's had so far this season, but this guy's a plus-plus defender. But it's like, where will the bat mature as he gets older? Is there power in it? And that's probably what you have to speak to.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head, right? He's 6'4". He's long. He's lean. He's got stretch and extension out in front. I mean, I've watched enough Grand Canyon games and enough Jacob Wilson at bats this year to know, like, the dude can hit a baseball very, very hard. It's not the way that he likes to approach his game. I watched him hit a triple in the second weekend of the season that I swear had to have left the bat at 108, and it almost took down the left field foul pole. Like, the guy has power, and he's lean. Like, he's going to put on like 15 pounds before he plays in the big leagues. It's just like, is he ever going to have the approach or the mentality to want to be that type of a player? Is he ever going to want to hit for power? Because his dad never did. So when I think about it, I'm like, I still buy the hit tool. I still buy the defense. I still buy him as a draft prospect. But in terms of a fantasy perspective, I don't think he's going to be a guy that ever hits for a ton of power. I don't think he's going to be a guy that ever steals a ton of bags. I just think he's going to be rock steady. In terms of the other guy, really quick, Jacob Gonzalez, again, really polarizing. Like, it's a strange left-handed swing where he throws his hips open really early, but he just impacts the ball. He's always impacted the ball. He's always made a ton of contact. He's got a good approach. probably slides over to third base like Brooks Lee did. But man, it just speaks to how good the top 10 or top 12 in this class are. Like, you try to poke holes in these players and it's tough.
Do you like Jacob Gonzalez as a better offensive prospect overall than Jacob Wilson? Do you think those are like tiers different?
I think the upside of what Jacob Wilson could become is greater than what Jacob Gonzalez could become. That said, if I was, you know, if you wanted me to pick a more offensive player right now at the next level, I would probably take Jacob Gonzalez. And the left-handed bat never hurts.
So where this takes us, though, is where I think some of the biggest difference in where your valuation is currently than some of what else is out in the industry seems to be your rank on, again, hopefully I'm saying it right, Arjun Nimala. And there is big power potential out of what he's projected as a shortstop. This is a shortstop projected at what you have written as some believe a 70 grade power. So you're talking about huge names and Jacob Gonzalez and Jacob Wilson. And now you're talking about someone coming out of Strawberry Crest with 70 grade power that you have valued above. So talk to us about him.
Man, I'm looking for outliers. Like, how hard is it to find a Bo Bichette? Like, how hard is it to find a guy that hits 285 with 35 homers? Like, I just think it's so incredibly difficult to find that player at shortstop that if you get the chance to draft it, I just think you kind of like take that risk. Arjun Nimala, to me, I don't know if the hit tool is ever going to put him into like a roll 70 type of guy, but I do think he's the type of guy that can hit 255 or 260 at the next level. I think he can peak at 35 home runs. I think he's going to stay at shortstop. He can run a little bit. Like, that sort of player just simply doesn't exist, at least not in spades at the big league level. And so when you take that, when you take the profile and you melt it into the fact that this kid is going to be 17 years old until the end of this year, he'll be 17 all year. He's extremely young. When you see the development ahead of him, I mean, he doesn't even play baseball. For the longest time, he didn't play baseball in the off seasons. He played cricket. So I just think there's so much greenness to his game, and there's so much trajectory and like what if in this profile that if I'm a scout, if I'm a front office guy and I'm looking for like an organizational pillar, an anchor, like a real special talent, Arjun Namala's upside is much higher and much greater than Jacob Gonzalez and Jacob Wilson. And for me, I'll take the risk in this case and I'll buy the upside.
Yeah, I think that'll definitely be one of your stamped approval type of players, because he's definitely not like, he's not like he's not on list. It's just you have him as like a top, I think, 7 player. People can go check out the list. They can check your link and stuff. But he's barely inside the top 15. Like pipeline, he's like 14. So it's a little different. I'm going to ask you about one more player and then just an overarching thing. One of my favorite players for a long time, and obviously you can tell I've watched a lot of like Vanderbilt, is Enrique Bradfield Jr. He great hit tool, one of the fastest players in baseball. And then this year looks like he started to add more muscle, obviously trying to change and have a better approach to getting to the major leagues. Power numbers, you know, they're still getting there. He's through 44 games. He does have one less double than the previous year. 5 homers this year, 8 last year. His slug is not quite the same, but he's still hitting over 300 and he's stolen 30 bases. So, you know, can Enrique Bradfield be a double digit 10 to 15 homer guy? Because we know he's a 30 plus stolen base guy, especially with new baseball. He might be a 50 stolen base player. But what do you think the offensive profile is looking like with Enrique Bradfield Jr.?
I mean, I don't think his swing is ever going to cater to a guy that hits like 12 to 15 home runs. I know we're kind of.
Yeah,
it's a little slappy. It's a little flat. Like, I think ultimately, and you got to remember, like, he's switching to a wood bat. Like, he's not going to hit with these metal bats his whole life either. So I think ultimately he's probably going to be a guy that's more in the 6 to 10, 6 to maybe 12 at his peak home runs. But to your point, like, Enrique Bradfield is so fast and he doesn't get enough credit for this either. Like, he's so instinctual on the base paths. It's an art to him. I do think he's going to be a guy that's going to steal over 40 bags a year. And so, like, if you're looking for floor, like if you're looking for a guy outside of Dylan Cruz, who I think is, you know, should move pretty quickly through the minors and is going to play an elite center field and provide a ton of base value and impact on the base pass. Like, this is it. He's probably not going to be a guy that like totally transforms the lineup, but he's going to be a nice element that a lot of teams, frankly, could use at the top of their lineup right now.
So there's a lot of guys we didn't talk about. Aiden Miller's out there. Hurston Waldrop, you kind of brought up a little bit. Thomas White. There's a whole bunch. Tommy Troy. There's a bunch of interesting players. Yohandy Morales is someone I've always kind of been like locked into. But the question to end this is, who are the rising and falling prospects right now? I can set you up for one. I noticed someone I've loved for a long time, and you've moved into your first round is Chase Davis out of U of A. But like, who are a couple of the guys moving up and moving down that people, especially when you think about profiles offensively, whether it's pitching or for counting stats, who are some guys that are moving up and moving down on drafts that we need to be paying attention to?
Yeah, Chase Davis is a great way to start this off. I think he's got kind of an outside shot of sneaking into the top 10. I think specifically with the Colorado Rockies, I haven't heard anything that attaches the two, but he's so similar aesthetically to what Carlos Gonzalez did for that team. And you know, I know the Rockies brass absolutely love and covet power more than any other organization out there. You can kind of see that as you go back and look at their other drafts.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
I know how you're feeling right now.
Stop it, don't do that.
I'm here for you.
Oh. In this league.
You are too easy.
But the offensive side continues to kind of backtrack. He's got some power. He can run. His hard hit is under 20% this year. His strikeout rate is okay. He's hitting 246 with a 331. So here's the answer for you. He's a top 100 prospect. I think he's been sitting around the 50s or 60s. I think in reality, he might be more of an 80s type of guy. And there's an argument to be said. If you don't think about proximity, maybe guys like Yasser Mercedes are more valuable than him, but he will get a time soon. I just don't know what that offensive profile looks like. So when you say, is he a long-term hold in dynasty? Yeah, I'd say so. Top 100 guys are. If the offense works out, watch the hell out. Just don't know if it is. You know, maybe his upside is Tommy Edman. This downside is nothing. You know, I mean, it's just a defensive guy that has no offense. Is Nick Ahmed. You know what I mean? Like, that's his offensive downside. His offensive upside could be a guy that steals significant bases, hits some homers. He definitely has some very impressive power when he can connect with it, but that's just not really showing up. So I think that's where I would put him. And those are great questions. There were some others. Like I said, any that I didn't answer, I'll try to get onto the thread and answer. And any I didn't answer, I will try to jump onto the Patreon thread, answer those so you guys got them. But thank you guys so much. 24 hours, bunch of questions. You guys really jumped to it. So now that definitely tells me we should do some questions on the pod. So we'll do that. Hey, thank you to Joe Doyle for being on the podcast. Thank you to you guys for hanging out. Thanks to Dennis Sidler with Sid's Graphs. You guys can go and check out. He just did signings with Brandon Lau. It's such an interesting one he did with Brandon Lau. I'm completely forgetting. He'd had like two others too. I think Manuel Rodriguez was one of them, and I'm completely blanking on the others. Go to his website, sidsgraphs.com. Follow him on the social medias to see where he's going. I believe he's coming out later this month and trying to lock down a few signings out here in Arizona, which would be sweet. And, you know, All-Star game, whenever that comes, Dennis goes out to the All-Star game because he's got clients that make it. You know what I'm saying? So go and check out all his awesome stuff, whether it's cards, baseballs, hats, helmets, bats, whatever it is. You can find it over at Sid's Graphs. You guys can find me on all the places. Tuesdays on Rates and Barrels, Wednesdays on CBS, or Thursdays whenever you listen, Monday through Friday on Fantasy Pros, and of course, the ITL Pod. I am lots of places. Thank you guys all for your support, even when Brandon Fott throws it in my face, or, you know, throws it in my face, and then my face hits it 110 miles out of the stadium, something like that. But thank you guys for hanging out with me. Hopefully you enjoyed Prospect One. Give it a little like, little review, whatever it is. Make sure you're subscribed and follow me on Twitter at Is It The Welsh. Until next week, my friends, I'll talk to you right here on Prospect One.